I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup, where we'll dive into Kitchener's preliminary budget discussions and look at what's happening with the regionally operated childcare centers. Plus, I have a few other important items that we should keep our eye on as well. Let's get started with the Kitchener 2021 budget. Kitchener Council met for its preliminary budget discussions on November 30th. This is a chance for staff to present their budget recommendations and for council members to seek clarification and ask for additional information in the form of issue papers prior to budget day in January. CAO Dan Chapman said that he hopes this is a sobering but hopeful budget.
But certainly this is the first budget that's being delivered in the context of the global pandemic on a scale that none of us have ever experienced in our lifetimes. And that's the context within which we're setting the budget this year. The pandemic continues to have major impacts on society, which overshadow most current decision-making processes, including the budget process.
He says it's important to not cut services and also respect the need for responsible increases. He notes that several previous actions have allowed the city to be well-positioned to deliver a responsible budget. Staff's proposed budget would result in a 1.1% property tax increase, which, if approved, would be the lowest tax impact to Kitchener residents in over 10 years. Staff spent some time explaining some history and the process of getting to this budget. As noted on the city's website, years of passing balanced budgets, paying down debt, and building up reserve funds have allowed the city to focus on affordability for ratepayers without making cuts to the important programs and services residents value. The mayor highlights that this budget has obviously been impacted by the pandemic. He says, as a result of the pandemic, the proposed budget is almost entirely focused towards affordability and the maintaining of highly valued community programs and services. He's proud that in a year of tremendous challenges, they're looking at a budget that first and foremost looks after our residents and businesses while also helping ensure that we build back better as we come out the other side of this pandemic. During the presentation, staff mentioned that most residents want a tax increase close to the rate of inflation while still maintaining services. Staff also state that the estimated 2020 deficit is more than the $5.8 million surplus from the previous 5 years. Sometimes all of these percentages and estimates can make it challenging to know what this means on a more individual and practical level. So a 1% change to the tax levy would mean about $11 for the average household. That also translates to about $1.3 million to the city. This will be important to the later budget discussion. Now, the recommended property tax increase of 1.1% is only one part of the impact for residents. Water utilities have a proposed increase of 0.9% and a proposed gas rate of 1.5%. Combined, these increases have an impact of about $34 for the average household. Organizations that rely on some funding from the city often present preliminary budget requests at this meeting as well. We heard from Mary Chevreau from the Kitchener Public Library. Her main request was for some changes in funding to support the library removing late fees as a source of income. This was a really interesting conversation to me. Apparently, cities across Canada are looking at and many are starting to remove late fees. Mary mentions that these can often result in barriers to access digital technology, which is more important than ever right now.
Access to the internet, technology, and library collections means more to our customers than ever. Which, of course, brings me to my issue paper and my ask. COVID-19 has exposed a huge barrier and an inequity to access for our library collections. And this barrier and inequity all has to do with late fees. Like many public libraries, Kitchener Public Library charges for late fines. Today, we have over 11,000 adults and children who are blocked from borrowing any items, including e-content, from our libraries because they owe $20 or more in fines.
She notes that the revenue from fines in 2019 was $163,138. Some counselors seek clarification on a few issues. Mary confirms that this request is only regarding late fees, and there would still be replacement charges for lost books and materials. While several councillors comment on the value of removing such barriers to access, others have questions about whether this decision will impact availability of materials for library patrons, and Councillor Gazzola says that he's hesitant to just toss out these rules.
I really am struggling with the concept of throwing out rules. Even if you're poor, you can afford, you can follow rules. I don't quite appreciate it.
Mary responds that it's not about throwing out rules, but improving equitable access. She notes that it seems late fees don't actually deter people from returning materials late, but it can result in fewer people accessing the library services and resources.
We have found is that late fees, while intended to act as a deterrent, are in some kind of lesson of responsibility, in fact, do neither. Those who can afford late fees simply keep their items out as long as they want and pay the fine. Those who can't simply stop using the library. And furthermore, those who can't tend to be people from low income or marginalized groups and our children. This is a time for the city of Kitchener to take a leadership role in the region and remove fines as a form of library revenue.
The Center and the Square also presented a budget update. Their budget proposal looks very similar to previous years, without any requests for an increase in support. They shared how the Center and the Square has tried to react to the pandemic and to plan for the future of the Center and the Square. Sadly, it's noted that it's unlikely to see any shows at the Center before fall 2021, and it's more likely even to be early 2022. If you thought issues of snow clearing had been solved when the city finalized its decision earlier this year to not offer citywide sidewalk snow clearing, you'd be wrong. Councillor Gazzola asked what the budget savings would be if we didn't clear snow from bike lanes this winter. But staff said that the city is legislated to clear bike lanes. There were also some questions around the $250,000 listed as sidewalk clearing in the budget. That is funding for the proactive bylaw officers and assistive services for those using sidewalk clearing through the city's partnership with the Working Center. As council considers possible additional savings to the budget, Councillor Galloway-Seelock suggests a wage freeze for council members this year.
Probably not going to save much more than 1.001%, but I'd like to ask that an issue paper be brought forward to freeze council wages for this year.
Councillor Singh is quick to jump in and say, "Oh, you beat me to it," and is supportive of this suggestion. Councillor Chapman also agrees that's a good recommendation and asks for an issue paper on expanding the wage freeze to all non-unionized city staff as well. In addition, she asks for a hiring freeze for the city to be included in that issue paper. Council seeks further clarification on a few budget issues, with Councillor Gazzola wondering why the proposed budget and actual budget numbers differed by $4 million regarding development issues. Staff say it has to do with the fact that development continues at a strong pace, more than anyone expected it to.
The reason for the projection in 2020 being over $4 million is after we had the surge of building permit activity from the downtown development charge exemption expiry, which was March 1, 2019, I predicted that our permit activity would slow down, and I was dead wrong. The activity in Waterloo Region, especially Kitchener, continued. The interest rates stayed low. As noted earlier in the presentation, interest rates are going to stay low for two or three more years. And the amount of influx of GTA owners coming to Kitchener exceeded my expectations and exceeded CMHC predictions from a year ago. So that's part of the reason, or the main reason, for being out by $4 million.
It looked like the Finance Committee meeting was wrapping up and moving on to the special council meeting. However, Councillor Chapman jumped in and requested an issue paper on reducing the tax increase from 1.1% to 0%. That resulted in a larger and rather tense discussion about whether that was an appropriate request or not. Staff said that would mean a cut of $1.4 million, which would definitely impact service levels. Councillor Schneider says he can't support this motion as he believes staff have come up with a very helpful and compassionate budget.
Thank you, Chair Davey. You know, staff have come up with a really good budget here. You know, we're not losing service levels. We've got great things, the equity, diversity, inclusion program in there. This is all in there, affordable housing, everything. To get to zero for some optic like that, I think it's misguided, because we have a lot of hurting people in this community, economic recovery, businesses. This is all part of what's in the budget. It's a very helpful budget. It's a very compassionate budget. It's a budget that looks after a lot of things that our citizens are passionate about.
Councillor Singh agrees and says that staff have worked hard to make this budget work and that there's no secret stash of money they can access to get the increase down to 0%.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief on this. I take a little bit of exception of the comment that staff can juggle things around. There is no secret stash. There are no monies that's being hidden, that's not being shown to the public. It's very clear that if you want a reduction, it's going to come at the cost of a service delivery cut.
Councillor Davey tends to agree with what has been said already. He finds it frustrating that anyone would suggest that we could offer services without having a way to fund them.
And to be frank, I'm equally disappointed and frankly a little bit angry, because one of the things I hate most about the way the political world is today is the idea that we can do things without having to fund them. And the fact that Councillor Knight has brought up a very real point of the potentially largest tax increase for a new service in history was supported by the same person that's trying to be the champion of a 0% tax increase blows my mind. There is an utter disconnect between what we do and what we have to pay for. And it really, really frustrates me. If staff could get to 0% without affecting the services, they would have. We have built that trust over the years. And the fact that it's being questioned, I take offense at the suggestion.
Mayor Barry concludes this discussion by saying people are looking for a good, responsible approach to the budget, and he believes that's what has been presented today.
I think there's a couple things that we need to remember. I mean, first of all, the last thing that I think anybody in this city is looking for right now is populist politics. What people are looking for is good, rational decision making from our council, and I've been proud that up till now, quite frankly, we have demonstrated that as a council throughout the last 2 years, and particularly over the last 8 months. I would hope that in the midst of this budget process, we don't start trying to stray from that.
The motion to have an issue paper on reducing the budget is supported by councillors Chapman and Gazzola, and therefore fails. You can find out more about the Kitchener budget at kitchener.ca/budget. There's a feedback survey there, as well as details about public input sessions happening December 7th and 14th. Final budget day is currently scheduled for January 18th, 2021. The meeting switched from Finance Committee to a special council meeting. Here, Councillor Michaud presented a motion, basically the same motion presented to and approved by Regional Council recently, regarding the province's proposed changes to conservation authorities. I shared about that motion in last week's episode, but if you'd like to know more, visit grandriver.ca. Like at Regional Council, this motion passes with unanimous support. Well, that meeting clocked in at about 5 hours and 15 minutes, but as you can see, there was a lot to discuss. Another issue which has resulted in some rather lengthy discussions and meetings is the recommendation to close 5 regionally operated childcare centres. Let's look at what got us to this point. This feels like a bit of deja vu for some families, I'm sure. You see, just 5 years ago, in 2015, Regional Council was having a similar discussion about closing the 5 centres it operates. Just like now, that discussion was sparked by a report from KPMG looking for efficiencies and cost savings at the regional level. Both in 2015 and now, it's been noted that the region is not mandated to be a service provider for childcare, only a systems manager. For KPMG, then, any service that is not required by legislation is an easy target for cutting. In 2015, parents, families, and educators rallied in support of the centers and were successful in that endeavor. Council then voted to keep all five regional operated centers open. Fast forward to now, and while much of the discussion is similar, the result is very different. Council voted 12-3, with Mayor McGarry absent, in support of closing the centers. Only Councillors Verbanovich, Shantz, and Galloway voted in support of keeping them open. That means that four of the centers, one in Kitchener and three in Cambridge, will close by the first week in September 2021. The fifth center in Elmira is a bit more complicated as it's run in partnership with the school board. It's hoped that a new operator can be found to take over that site at some point. The vote to close means that over 200 childcare spaces will be lost, as will the equivalent to 62 full-time jobs. The KPMG report notes that these closures will free up approximately $4.3 million of provincial funds, money that must be dedicated to childcare. That leaves another $1 million or so from the region's budget freed up to, according to council, improve the equity and quality of the entire childcare system of nearly 14,000 spaces. As noted in the Waterloo Region Record, Councillor Elizabeth Clark says, "My motivation is fairness. The regional centres provide high quality care and pay their employees better than private or not-for-profit daycare centres, and regional tax dollars subsidize those costs by about $5,000 for every childcare spot, regardless of how much money the child's family might earn." Similar to 2015, councillors were inundated with emails from residents objecting to the closure of these centres, as well as a petition. The region held a public input session where nearly 50 residents registered to speak. Almost 40 more people spoke at the December 2nd council meeting as well. Every single one of those delegations were opposed to the closure. A number of themes became clear as delegations spoke to council, such as access to infant care, support for children with special needs, the level of care offered by staff, the issue of daycare deserts, and how closing the centers is a decision that will most impact women. Delegate Claudia Kennedy shares some of her family's challenges in finding care for their infant.
Choosing a daycare center for my daughter was one of the hardest decisions that I ever had to make. I had to decide who I could trust to watch and care for the most important thing in my life. I conducted a lot of research on the centers in Cambridge. I discovered quickly that very few of them provided infant care. I started going on their websites and looking at reviews from parents. I also looked at the inspection information available on the Ministry of Education website. Once I had narrowed down my selection to five centers, I added them to the one list. I registered my daughter on the one list when I was 4 months pregnant in January 2018. I was requesting an infant spot for July 2019. I was unable to secure a spot until September 2019 due to the limited amount of infant spots available across the centers. My husband and I had to exhaust our vacation for the year to cover the gap between our maternity leave ending and our daughter starting daycare.
Sandra Camara, like many of the parents who spoke, had used non-regional childcare centers as well. She says the difference between those experiences were dramatic, with the region offering truly exceptional care.
There were so many children, and I just remember the chaos in the halls and classrooms. The center was bought out, and that's when things went downhill. The staff turnover was ridiculous. Just as Livia and I would start to build a relationship with her caregivers, it seemed one of them was leaving. The staff were working longer shifts, were underpaid, and you could see it was taking a toll on them. The first few years of child life are so crucial and set the tone for so many aspects of their lives and personality. We need to fight to make sure that they have the best possible start in life that they can. I am confident Emilia is getting that with Christopher Children's Center.
Several delegations referred to how the regional childcare centers were intentionally placed in neighborhoods that had limited or no other childcare options, calling them daycare deserts. Delegation Christine DeGeyer explains the importance of daycare location in supporting families.
These centers have been strategically placed in locations where there wasn't a lot of childcare options and where the financial ranges of families vary greatly. This was a well-thought-out process in hopes of bridging the gaps between daycares and bringing opportunities to parents regardless of their stories.
Kim Loxton, an educator with the region, shares her experiences in a variety of settings and the relief she felt upon being hired with the region.
Over the years, I've worked in many forms of childcare, great centers, not so great ones, private home childcare, and eventually as a casual supply with the region of Waterloo. When I was offered that position, I felt lucky and that I could breathe. Not only was I finally going to be implementing the program philosophy I hadn't seen since college, but I was finally going to be making a living wage as an ECE, even as a casual staff, something that is unfortunately unheard of in this profession.
It's important to understand that the higher wages received by regional educators actually benefited all child care educators locally due to wage subsidy calculations. Although I have reached out to some regional counselors, none have yet explained how this issue will be addressed once the centers close. Sarah Inch describes her family's experience with their daughter Reese, who was born 3 months early and had expected developmental delays. However, Sarah believes that her daughter's experience in a regional center had a huge role to play in her daughter's tremendous development, which a doctor referred to as magical.
My name is Sarah Inch, and my daughter Reese attends Edith McIntosh Child Care Center in Kitchener. She represents one of the many children of the East Ward that attend the center. I know that by now you don't need any more convincing that these centers provide unparalleled exceptional care to our communities. The rally of support that working parents who are already under an immense amount of stress and pressure have shown against closing the five directly operated centers should be a testament. But to drive home the message one last time, our daughter was highly predicted to have cognitive and physical developmental delays due to being born 3 months early. Reese is assessed by some of the leading neonatologists in the country at Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto. At her last assessment, she was ranked in the 90th percentile for development, a massive improvement from previous assessments. Our doctor looked us in the eyes and said, "This here is pure magic." But to be honest, it's not magic and it's not luck. It's an example of how essential quality early childhood education is for our children, how important the access is to qualified teachers that are so invested in growth and well-being of our children is, and how important the access to programs like Kids Ability is for our children. If you don't believe in the importance of this, please keep Reese in mind as your proof.
About a third of the spaces at regional centers are filled by children with special needs. That completes the delegations, and council moves into discussion and voting on this issue. Mayor Barry begins the discussion with a Nelson Mandela quote.
Colleagues, I'd like to begin by a quote from the late Nelson Mandela. And in the quote, Mandela was quoted as saying, "History will judge us by the difference we make in the everyday lives of children." Colleagues, tonight this council is making a decision which will determine how we will be judged in terms of the difference we make in the everyday lives of children.
Councillor Galloway also won't support the recommendation. He laments that this discussion was lumped in with the budget process when it shouldn't be a cost savings consideration alone. He also believes that the KPMG report could have had clearer options to better serve this discussion.
The next thing I want to lament on is that I think the staff report or the KPMG report ought to have had a better worked out, fleshed out, vetted implementation plan. I think a lot of people did not understand what or where the money that would have been spent closing these centers would have gone to.
Councillor Shantz is the third and final councillor who votes against the closure. She too thinks there is a need for a plan to be in place before you can vote to close existing childcare spaces. She suggests a possible deferral on this decision until such a plan can be developed, but no one else is willing to second that motion. The other 12 councillors present all vote in support of closure of the five centres. Most of their arguments reference lack of fairness with the current system and the need for equity for all families. Councillor Lorentz sums it up like this.
In my view, we have to stop this cycle. I heard some of my colleagues speaking for the 1.9% of children that are in the system, and I'd like to speak on behalf of the 98.1% that doesn't seem to be represented. We need to have better quality daycare for everybody, not just a few chosen few. And that's my view.
And Councillor Strickland agrees by saying,
for me, and I echo the comments made by some of my colleagues here, it's about equity, equity, and equity.
So that leaves us with a decision to close the five centers in 2021. So hopefully those summaries give you a sense of what's happening with the Kitchener budget and also the decision to close the five regionally operated child care centers next year. I did also want to mention that Wilmot Mayor Les Armstrong, who you will recall posted a video to Facebook earlier this year that suggested the Black Lives Matter movement was a hoax, is back in the news again. After five complaints to the Integrity Commissioner about Mayor Armstrong's behavior, a recent decision by the commissioner was announced. He has said that the mayor must present a truthful, honest, and sincere apology to people of color in Waterloo Region. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Is this an appropriate and sufficient response from the Integrity Commissioner? What would your demands have been if you were in that role? Feel free to share your thoughts with me on Twitter at M2Bowman on this or any other issue discussed on today's show. I'll be back next week with episode 3, where I will take a deeper dive into the very packed Waterloo Council agenda that includes a motion for the city to advance its work on Indigenous initiatives, anti-racism, accessibility, and equity, and a motion that looks at what the city can do to encourage reallocating funds from policing to more upstream services. Remember to follow at Radio Waterloo to stay up to date on all of the CKMS programming. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom.